She kicked out over the hatchway. With the wind, the hatch led effectively down, and dropped after Ernst and toward Frick and his team. A moment later, Hobbs found the mutineer knocked unconscious against an ugly set of waste baffles. The pressure was still dropping, and the woman's flimsy emergency suit was hopelessly rent. Her eyes were starting to bug, forcing the closed eyelids open a hair. Ernst wouldn't last long without help, but there wasn't anything Hobbs had time to do for her. The blood from the cut on Hobbs's arm spurted in time with her racing heart. The globules floated against Gunner Ant's prone form, dotting her uniform. "You've got my blood. Happy now?" Hobbs asked, spraying repair sealant onto her own wounds. Another jolt rocked the ship. Not acceleration, something cracking. The structure of the Lynx was beginning to fail. Ant's breathing started to kick up. She was dying. "May the Empress save you from death," Hobbs said to Ant, with the cold cadence of tradition. It was all she could do. She paused to make sure the rent at her own throat was sealed, then pushed on, wondering if Frick and his team were still alive. First engineer. Decompression was not the word for it. When the reverse thrust struck, the plates surged toward the bow, 30 tons of hull alloy doing at least 20 MPS. The shockwave from the collision, loose armor plates smashing against the bow hull wall, hammered Frick's ears even through his pressure hood. He was tossed forward, then pulled up short on his tether with a gut-wrenching snap, finding himself spinning at the end of 3 meters of strong line. His ribs screamed in fresh agony. Then came the truncated howl of flash decompression, total and instantaneous. The entire forewall of the bow was knocked out. In the seconds before he pulled up his face mask to complete the pressure seal around his head, Frick saw the void before him with naked eyes. His ears and eyeballs felt as if they would burst. Both sight and hearing ruptured, then the smart plastics of the suit found their grip, and the pounding in his head was replaced with the polymer smell of recycled air. He blinked until vision returned, looked out at the huge hole torn out by the plates. Had the Lynx accelerated forward instead of in reverse, they would have all been crushed. Not just the engineering team, although they would have been flattened most spectacularly, but the entire vessel would have been pummeled by the careening armor. Against the mean light of the stars, Watson Frick saw the glitter of a drone sailing away from the ship. Good God! They must have used the dead man rail, launching the drone to push the Lynx backward. What was the captain thinking? Even with easy gravity to compensate, the frigate was designed to accelerate smoothly, not with massive jolts. Frick scanned his team. They all seemed conscious, although Metasmith was helping Ensign Baxton with his face mask seal. Something about the team looked wrong, however. It wasn't merely the sudden darkness, the hard shadows of orange gas giants and Legius's distant sun. It was that the team didn't seem to be... He did a quick count. There were 14 suited figures. 14. Someone was gone. That was impossible. Everyone had been clipped. Hypercarbon strongline attached to hull alloy rings on a bulkhead wall. The utility belt on a Navy engineer's pressure suit was made of diamond tensile monofilament. You could hang a pair of thrashing African elephants from these rigs with a 10,000-year safety margin. Rating Inders was waving her arms wildly, trying to get Frick's attention. He looked over at her, disbelief pounding in his head. She pointed at a short crack in the cargo bay bulkhead. The crack ran straight through the line of clip rings. Then he saw it. One of the hull alloy rings had been ripped out. The tether rigs were sound, but the bulkhead was cracking. Frick climbed his strongline up and touched his suit's audio probe to the bulkhead. He heard the familiar hum of the Lynx's air nanos and the moan of decompression through what must have been another hull breach on the other side. And something else. The high-pitched tremolo of tiny pits propagating in hull alloy. The forward bulkhead, the last hull alloy barrier between the Lynx and massive decompression, was cavitating. Frick swallowed at the menacing sound. One of the flockers must have released a metal-eating virus. Nothing else would cause the material to disintegrate this way. In minutes, or perhaps seconds, the engineering team would all be pitching through the void. Frick brought his hand up in a fist, thumb and little finger extended. The vacuum hand signed for lethal emergency. When he had every eye on him, the engineer brought the hand down to point at the hatchway. They had to get it open. Even through pressure masks, he recognized surprise in a few faces. The other side of the bulkhead was still pressurized. Opening the hatchway now would piss away still more of the Lynx's oxygen and test the structural integrity of the walls between here and the next bulkhead, all the way back at the forward gunnery station. But with the bulkhead cracking, the oxygen was gone anyway. And it would go far less explosively if they let it flow through the hatchway than if the whole bulkhead blew. At this moment, the hull alloy had hard vacuum on one side and almost a full atmosphere on the other. They had to equalize the pressure. The Lynx's designers would have assumed that the cargo area would lose pressure gradually, at least 20 seconds to empty the huge space of air. No one would foresee the entire front of the ship being sheared away at once. And of course the metal virus added to the stresses on the metal. Metasmith was the first to react. She swung on her tether like an acrobat, planting her magnet next to the hatchway and bracing her feet to either side. She gave the manual wheel a twist. It seemed to protest for a moment, then started to turn. A few more hands reached the wheel in time to speed her efforts. When the hatch blew, the outrush of air knocked Metasmith back at a dangerous velocity. But the woman swung in a leisurely arc, letting her strong line run out to its full length. She executed a perfect landing on the far side of the cargo bay bulkhead, as pretty as zero-G ballet. Frick pressed his audio probe back against the bulkhead. It shrieked with a familiar wail of decompression, but the engineer's sharp ear still detected the soprano ringing of a traveling hull alloy fissure. The Lynx was still breaking. He shut his eyes and listened carefully, praying. Then it came. The sound was changing. The ringing seemed to gradually recede, lessening as the stresses of unequal pressure drained away through the open hatchway. Frick opened his eyes, sighing with relief. Now he could actually see the damage in front of him. The crack traveled past him, missing his own tether ring by a few centimeters. He stuck his suited finger into the fissure. It was less than 4 centimeters deep, and there was no notable vibration trembling within it. The ship's hull alloy had an immune system, nanomachines that should fight off the Rix virus, but it might take a while for the infection to be completely eliminated. What the ship needed was a respite from the stresses of high G and sudden jolts, but for the moment, the Lynx had stabilized, at least until the captain decided to break her again. Engineer rating. Engineer rating Telmore Biggs blinked his eyes again, hoping sight would return. Biggs knew he was lucky to be alive at all. By rights, his head should be smeared across the Legis system by now. Pure chance had saved him. As he'd been torn from the bulkhead wall, his face mask must have been whipped around so that it had sealed itself. Either that, or Biggs had done so with some autonomic part of his brain whose actions were not recorded in memory. But in the seconds of hard vacuum, his eyes must have bugged bad. He could see a sort of blurry streak before him, and that was all. From the screaming in his head, Biggs figured that his eardrums had blown too. But that didn't bother him much. Out here in the airless void, sound was not a native species. And with communications forbidden, he wouldn't be talking to anyone on his suit radio. But Biggs wished that he could see. At least then he could figure out why he'd been plucked from the bulkhead. Biggs was positive that he'd been clipped right. Any shock strong enough to break his monofilament line should have snapped him in two like a breadstick. He concentrated on the blurry streak. It pulsed every few seconds, a building top blinker seen through a rain-soaked window. Biggs judged the period to be about 4 seconds. A pressure suit, emergency beacon, pulsed once per second, so it wasn't a crewmate out there. Then the rating understood. The pulsing light was the Legis sun, and Telmore Biggs was spinning, rotating once every 4 seconds. He waited some more, and found that his sight seemed to be gradually coming back. There were other pulsing things, all with the same 4 second period. They slowly resolved into streaks of light. Stars. He could almost see the sun now, a distant but sharp disk against the black void. Biggs felt strangely euphoric. The screaming headache that he should be suffering was absent. The pants-pissing fear he expected to feel had also not materialized. He carefully checked the medical charges on his utility belt. He grunted with recognition as his fingers found the expended shock pack. Whatever lizard part of his brain had managed to seal his face mask had also pumped him full of painkiller and stimulants. He was alone in the vacuum, spinning out of control, half blind and completely deafened. But Biggs felt as sharp and confident as a man after his first cup of coffee in the morning. The engineer rating smiled happily as his vision cleared. The sun was obvious now, the brightest light among the stars. and Biggs could see two of the system's orange-tinted gas giants. What he couldn't see was the Lynx. The darkened frigate must be pretty far away, and inertia would only carry him farther. Fortunately, in another few minutes, once he and the ship were out of the range of the Rick's big guns, Biggs could pull his emergency beacon. Then he would be rescued, no problem. Biggs decided that he'd had enough of spinning. He pulled the reaction canister from his belt and calculated the correct angle, then let off a quick spurt. The spinning slowed, the stars now twirling at the stately speed of a rink full of skaters. He could live with that. Engineer rating Biggs now saw a tether strongline flailing about him. It had been rotating with him, but now that his spin had stopped, it was wrapping itself around Biggs. He let it wind around his waist until he could grab the end. The clip was still in the ring. The ring mount must have been pulled clean out of the hull alloy. That was bad. That meant that the Lynx had serious structural damage. A traveling fissure in a bulkhead that was now exterior hull. But at least, Biggs thought happily, he hadn't clipped himself wrong. Being out here in space wasn't his fault. Then he saw something else, another object in the void. It was very distant, at the edge of his still blurry vision. The shape was dark, its edges glimmering. It seemed circular, unlike the long, thin Lynx. But perhaps he was seeing the ship head-on. That made sense. He'd been blown out the frigate's bow. Might as well get closer to home, Biggs thought. If the ship were badly damaged, as it surely was, it would be far easier to rescue a loose crewman if he stayed nearby. Biggs angled his reaction canister again and let loose a long spray. He watched the object carefully for a count of 20. Yes, he was getting closer now. He could see smooth metal facets now. It wasn't a huge and distant planetoid fooling his eyes. It was artificial. It must be the Lynx. Rating Telmore, Biggs sprayed again, smiling. He was going home. Executive Officer. Exo Hobbs rappelled down the last corridor before the cargo bay bulkhead, the wind of depressurization serving as gravity. She clipped her belt to a nearby ring before ordering her strongline grapple to release and follow. The outrush of air was slackening, but she didn't trust the respite. It had lessened once before, then increased again suddenly as if various breaches were blowing in turn. The last truly stable bulkhead she'd seen was the one at the forward gunnery station. She checked her pressure gauge. It showed near vacuum. That was a bad sign, but at least with hardly any air left in this segment of the Lynx, there couldn't be another decompression. Hobbs turned and saw the cargo bay hatch before her, one jump away. It was open. She reattached her grapple and jumped, letting out strongline as she neared the hatchway. She swallowed nervously, hoping she'd find Frick and his team alive in the cargo bay. Although she had prepared herself for the worst, strewn bodies among the ravages of the loose armor, when Hobbs reached the hatchway and peered through, she couldn't believe her eyes. It was blackness, with stars. There was no cargo bay. Catherine pulled herself through, aghast at the huge rent before her, a cracked dome open to the sky. A hand grabbed her shoulder. "Executive officer," came the surprised voice through the suit's audio contacts. Hobbs turned to see an engineer rating. The woman seemed healthy and unpanicked, the athletic lines of her body obvious in the pressure suit. The rating made a hand signal and Hobbs turned to follow her eyes. The whole engineering team seemed to be out here, huddled against the bulkhead. She breathed a sigh of relief. A suited figure moved toward her, Watson Frick, the first engineer. They connected their audio contacts. "What the devil does Zai think he's doing?" the engineer spat. "We had to accelerate, Frick," she explained. "The Rick spotted our cold jet reaction mass. They were about to backtrack it to us." "But why with a jolt like that? I lost a crewman." The first engineer's eyes sparkled with tears as he shouted, his hands grasping her shoulders. For a moment, Hobbs thought she might have to fend off another physical attack, but the man forced himself under control. "You used the dead man drone launcher, didn't you?" he said. She nodded. "We needed a mechanical acceleration, one as strong as possible, and to use a solid object as reaction mass. If we spread another cloud of water, the Ricks could have found us again. They used lasers to spot the ice crystals and extrapolated back to the Lynx." Frick thought for a moment, then swore, agreeing with a mean, sharp nod. "But we didn't expect the cargo bay exterior to go," Hobbs said. Frick shook his head. It shouldn't have. But there were hairline fissures, virus trails. We were probably infected in the flocker attack. This bulkhead here, he indicated what had been the cargo bay floor, is cavitating as well. Hobbs nodded. They'd had less than 20 minutes to catalogue all the flocker damage. One of the projectiles must have left metal-eating nanos. So that's why you opened this hatch, she said. Frick nodded. It was either a slow leak or another breakout. If we'd had an uncontrolled decompression, we might have lost the gunnery station bulkhead as well, and so on all along the ship. Catherine Hobbs swallowed, envisioning one bulkhead blowing after another, like the legendary Titanic filling with water. Her eyes scanned the bulkhead and saw the cracks that had coursed across its surface, fanning out in a wedge, a river delta seen from space. Frick, can she handle another turn? Another what? The captain has to yaw the ship again to bring us back head-on with the Ricks. Good God, said Frick. Hobbs checked the mechanical timepiece on her wrist. It had continued to function even in hard vacuum. The pilots should be pulling us back in 43 seconds, she said, but only at a 20th of a G, as per your message. No, it's too hard, Frick cried. 0.05 yaw at the centerline is much stronger out here. Hobbs shook her head in confusion. What was Frick babbling about? Did you ever ride the whip? He asked. Hobbs frowned. She remembered the game, a risky zero-G maneuver reinvented by each successive class at the academy. A long line of recruits holding hands, getting up spin in the big zero-gym on the academy orbital. In the middle, you were hardly moving, but you could feel the line's mass pulling harder and harder in both directions. And at either end, cadets were flying at unbelievable speed. When the line disintegrated, they'd hit the wall as if shot out of a cannon. The game eventually ended with a few cracked collarbones or a fractured skull, and would be strictly forbidden until the next year rediscovered its pleasures. The executive officer stared wide-eyed at the cracked hull alloy. What's going to happen, Frick? The first engineer stared at the cracks, then closed his eyes, his lips moving as if talking himself through some complex equation. He pushed out from the bulkhead to look over its entirety. Hobbs checked Captain Zai's chronometer. Only 28 seconds before the third acceleration was scheduled. Surely Zai knew that the cargo bay had ruptured. The ejected metal and oxygen traveling away from the ship would have been picked up even by passive sensors. But he wouldn't know that the structural damage extended to another layer of bulkhead. With the links in dark mode, the distributed internal sensors were offline. The bridge crew was blind to the fissures. And who knew how far the virus extended? It was possible that all the frigate's bulkheads were infected. Would Zai stick to the schedule they had agreed upon? 20 seconds. She pushed herself after Frick, reattached her audio contact to his. First engineer, report! The man opened his eyes. A yaw at that strength will tear the bow off the links, he said flatly. We'll lose it all, back as far as the forward gunnery station at least, maybe farther. Maybe the rest of the way? Hobbs asked. He nodded. Hobbs didn't hesitate. There wasn't time to think. She had to contravene the foremost rule of this engagement. This was why Zai had sent her up here. She was the only officer who would break the captain's orders if necessary. And it was absolutely necessary. Exo Hobbs pulled the handheld communicator from her belt and activated it. If the Ricks spotted the faint signal, so be it. To hell with them. The Lynx was less than 2 minutes from safety. Priority, priority, she said. Do not cold jet. We'll break up. Do not accelerate at all. Hobbs out. Then she flicked the device off. The first engineer looked at her. She ignored his appalled expression. We're stabilized out here. Put your team in damage control positions. For a moment, he didn't move. He couldn't believe she'd broken the captain's orders. I'll spell it out for you, Frick. Move yourself and your people inside. She yanked her tether, pulling them both toward the hatch. We may come under fire soon, she added. Indeed, they almost certainly would. Catherine Hobbs had made sure of that. Engineer rating. The closer he approached the object, the less likely it seemed that Tilmore Biggs had found the links. His vision continued to recover. Biggs could see now that the object wasn't entirely coherent. It seemed to be an agglomeration of large pieces, a few of which pulsed with their own rotation as the whole assemblage swung around itself. It couldn't be the frigate, unless tremendous damage had been done to her. If Biggs were really going home, home had been blown to pieces. He blinked again, trying to will his eyes back to clarity. He scanned the void, looking hopefully for a sign of the frigate nearby. There was nothing. Of course, even if he spotted the Lynx, there wasn't much he could do about it. Biggs's reaction canister was two-thirds empty, not enough juice in the can to jet off in a new direction. He was committed to this wreckage. A little closer, Biggs realized what the objects were. He could see a ragged metal disc at the center of the assemblage, and a few large pieces of hull alloy around it. The whole thing was surrounded by a faint haze of frozen nitrox. The largest object was the front of the Lynx, the cargo bay section that had blown out along with the loose armor plates and a certain engineer rating. Biggs whistled. The catastrophe that had hurtled him from the ship had been much bigger than he'd thought. He'd suspected a 10-meter-wide hole, at most, causing decompression strong enough to suck him through it. But this was major damage. He wondered if any other giant chunks of the Lynx were floating free. If the whole ship were in pieces, rescue wouldn't be coming any time soon. As he approached, Biggs's hurting eyes scanned the debris for a beacon pulse. Perhaps there were other survivors here. Full emergency transmissions weren't allowed. They would draw Rick's fire. But someone might have activated their blinker without the radio transmitter. He swept his wrist light through the haze, probing the dark metal. Nothing. Even with the stimulant still pushing happiness through his veins, his heart sank. He was alone. There were no corpses, at least. Biggs used up a bit more reaction mass to slow himself. He landed with a thunk on one of the pieces of shielding that the team had cut from the singularity generator. His suit magnets held, and the collision didn't set the massive shield spinning too violently. He stared at the chunk of bow bulkhead a dozen meters away, trying to imagine what the cargo bay would look like now. Fortunately, the engineering team had been tethered to the floor side. If they'd been attached to the plates, they'd all be out here. As it was, most of them would still be with the Lynx. It was a fluke that Biggs's ring had popped. Unless, of course, the cargo floor bulkhead had given way too. No, that didn't make sense. If that had happened, the frigate would be all over the place, and Telmore Biggs would have been flying along with a lot of debris, nitrox, and other crewmen. Apparently, only he had been tossed from the ship. He was alone, master of this tiny domain. Suddenly, Biggs heard a message, a transmission pumped past his ruined ears into second hearing. "Priority, priority!" came a clear voice. "Shit," he thought. "Who the hell was broadcasting? The Ricks would localize the transmission in no time." "Do not cold jet! We'll break up! Do not accelerate at all! Hobbs out!" The XO? Didn't she realize that she was jeopardizing the ship? Biggs brought up his suit's line-of-sight receiver, trying to determine where the transmission had come from. The device gave him a general direction, and he squinted into the blackness, searching for the Lynx. But his eyes still failed him. The frigate was nowhere to be seen. He squatted on the slowly spinning shield, hoping that the Ricks hadn't heard the transmission. He decided to count while he waited, marking the minutes until they would all be out of danger. "Captain. Enemy pulse fire has ceased," the sensor officer reported. Captain Lawrence Zai swallowed. The Rick's laser had been firing at a high rate, searching for traces of cold jet reaction mass. But now they had stopped looking. The enemy had heard Hobbs's message. "They must be charging up, sir." "Indeed." The firing rate of the Rick's ranging laser was variable. It could be fired several times a second at low power, or more infrequently with greater effect. If they had given up pulse fire, then the Ricks knew where the Lynx was. They were preparing a high-intensity punch, one sufficient to light up the Imperial frigate so that they could track her the rest of the way. Once the frigate was glowing from a laser hit, the Ricks' gravity weapons would begin the work of destroying her. "At least 10 seconds charge for the first shot," he guessed. Zai braced himself. The big flat screen flashed, lighting up the bridge as if a flare had bounded into the room. "A miss, sir! 100 meters off!" Zai nodded. The Ricks were off by 10 meters per second squared, roughly the push the Lynx had managed with the drone launcher. That kick had pushed her hard, enough to throw Zai out of his shipmaster's chair, and perhaps the loss of the cargo bay had resulted in a few more precious meters per second. "We've got to turn her, sir," the first pilot shouted. "We're broadside!" "Keep us floating, pilot," he commanded. If they could turn back to head-on orientation, they'd be a smaller target. But Kathry Hobbs had said another burst from the jets would break the Lynx up. Zai had to believe her. Hobbs wouldn't have given away their position unless she spoke with absolute certainty. So Zai had been forced into a dire bet that the Rix warship would miss them just a few more times. They were almost out of range. So close to safety. According to the bridge chronometer, they only had to survive another 90 seconds and they would drift out of the gravity cannon's perimeter. By their very nature, chaotic gravitons were far less coherent than photons. The Lynx was receding from the battlecruiser at more than 3,000 clicks per second. Under fixed physical laws, the frigate would soon be out of range. Once they reached safety, Zai could bring internal diagnostics online and find out for himself how hard to push his ship. 15 more seconds passed, enough time for the enemy to charge another burst. The silent flash came on schedule. "Another miss, sir! 200 meters aft!" "Unbelievable," Zai whispered. It had fallen on the other side of the first miss. They were overshooting. Luck had smiled on the Lynx again. Captain Zai leaned back, releasing his white-knuckled grip on his command chair. He sighed with relief. "We may have made it," he said. 10 seconds later, a shudder rocked through the bridge, and the high-pitched scream of boiling air filled the ship. Engineer rating. Telmore Biggs could see the Lynx now. The frigate sparkled against the black of space, the red light of laser fire running up and down its length. "No!" he cried. It was at least 20 kilometers away, glowing like an emergency light wand. The frigate's spindly shape seared itself into his vision like a sun glimpsed with naked eyes. Biggs realized that his vision had finally cleared, just in time to witness his ship and crewmates dying. He wished that he were still blind. Damn! They had almost made it out of range. By Biggs's reckoning, they would be out of the gravity cannon's perimeter in less than a minute. The engineer rating looked at the debris around him. It spun alone in the void, the forehull a minor planet with its own satellites, its own hazy atmosphere, even a population of one. Telmore Biggs. Soon this lost scrap heap would be all that remained of the Lynx. A few more sparkles erupted from the frigate over the next seconds. The chaotic gravity beam would be orienting now, marshalling its full power for a final shot, using the laser damage to aim. The Rix might only get one blast before the Imperial warship passed out of range, so they would make sure they had it right. Biggs squeezed the shock pack on his belt, the last dregs of stimulants giving him a moment of confidence for his decision. There was only one thing to do. He activated his emergency beacon at full strength, its pulsing light reflecting from the rotating armor plates around him. Then Biggs brought his engineer's torch online and charged it to hull alloy cutting temperatures. He aimed it at the armor below him and pulled the trigger. Light and heat flared from the cutter and the armor burned a bright white where he swept its flame. Biggs was now the sun for his tiny system, an unstable star casting hard flickering shadows on the spinning debris around him, glowing bright in the void. "Captain." "Keep us dark," Zai shouted over the din. "But they have us, sir. We're already lit up like a firewire." "Just wait," Zai yelled. "In another 20 seconds, they can't touch us." The damage control officer was finally silent. The man had wanted to reactivate the ship's internal sensors to help coordinate repair efforts. True, the Rix already knew exactly where the Lynx was. But emissions from the internals would give the enemy the frigate's orientation, and they'd target the drive. The Lynx would be crippled. Some part of the Lynx was certainly going to fry, but there was no sense giving the Rix their choice as to which. "Steady. At most, they can hit us twice at full power," Zai said. "Damage report's starting to come in from the aft comm point, sir," someone reported. The epicenter of the laser hit. "Report. No structural damage. The aft processor shaft looks fused. 10 dead and counting." Damn, Zai thought. More casualties and more processor capacity lost. All from a range-finding laser. When the burst of chaotic gravity came, it would be hell. "How long until we're safe?" he asked the ensign at the chronometer. 12, she said. "Count it," he ordered. The bridge grew silent as the numbers diminished. There was nothing any of them could do. A gravity beam worked its deadliest magic against the crew of its target. Snapped spines, crushed brains, ruptured internal organs. Without an energy sink to deflect the Rick's weapon, dozens, perhaps hundreds of their crewmates were about to die. Zai couldn't even warn his crew, but at least he could address the bridge.